Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
We're very much in support of treaty negotiations that have happened to date, particularly in Victoria and the Northern Territory. And we're quite disappointed that the treaty process and the consultations in South Australia under the Labor government continue to come to fruition with the present government. So I think there's been a lot of work that has been unfortunately wasted in that sense. But hopefully, you know, that cannot be lost. And, you know, we welcome all kinds of treaty negotiations right around the country from National Congress point of view.
So do you think something like a national treaty framework could also keep an eye on jurisdictions and different states and jurisdictions regarding a treaty? Because, I mean, you know, because Australia is one of the only countries in the Commonwealth without a treaty, we've also seen that in some places historically, before people, you know, understood the Commonwealth law, that some people, some of the treaties haven't been effective. So would a national framework, do you think, be able to kind of monitor what's happening in the states and jurisdictions?
Well, it certainly has its merits. I guess there's two sides to the argument here in terms of local state territory aspirations and how they feed through to the national law. We're certainly waiting to hear from the outcomes of each state and territory in relation to the treaty negotiations that they're having, because, you know, for far too long, as we know, in every kind of Aboriginal jurisdiction, the top-down approach doesn't really help us in any way. So hopefully, you know, from the ground level up may be the way to go. But I think the jury is still out in terms of whether you have, you know, treaty-based clan groups, whether you have organisations, or whether you have a whole overlaying national framework by which one is able to, you know, hold those other states and territories to account. But as we know in the past, that really hasn't happened in Aboriginal affairs.
Around January 26, you did have a national treaty forum, and you did put a lot of work into, like yourself and other participants, put in a lot of work regarding a treaty framework, I guess, for a national framework. Can you talk about some of the outcomes for that, or some of those discussions?
Yes, well, that was on the 26th of January, as you say, Kirsten, in Sydney, and there was it was for 3 days. It was hosted by the Indigenous Peoples organisations, and certainly supported by us at National Congress. I attended the full 3 days of those talks, and certainly people were bringing together their thoughts around you know, national, state and local treaties and what they might bring. I think Tony McAvoy has a very interesting concept, and he's put a lot of hard work into thinking about, you know, national treaty and what that might mean in terms of, you know, best possible outcomes for communities. And I think if you study his stuff, you know, it would provide that necessary framework, and it's steeped in terms of, you know, outcomes focus for our people. Because, you know, a lot of people will say, what's it going to do for our health, employment, education, etc.? But, you know, I think until we have one, we won't really know in that sense. But that was a really good, intensive 3 days by which, you know, there were people from all parts of the country that came together to discuss that. And I don't remember since the 80s even that there'd been such a gathering of people. But I think it's gained momentum right around the country. We've just seen, you know, the Barunga talks, that revival there, and we've seen people just upping up the ante about treaty all over our country now.
Yeah, it seemed like no one was going to budge on that. When it came to the crunch, there was going to be some kind of outcome at the Barunga Festival that would lead to further discussions around a treaty. So the communities have, was the land councils there, have actually signed a memorandum of understanding with the Federal Minister for Indigenous Affairs regarding, you know, further discussions on a treaty. So it seems like we've got a bit of a pattern going now where people aren't going to step back anymore. It's time to go forward on this.
Yes, look, absolutely right there, Kirsten. I think there is full momentum now and people are seizing at it. You know, since the constitutional recognition and reform issue around, you know, the voice, Makarrata Truth-Telling Commission, you know, the hope is really that, you know, we press along for treaty because I see such impetus, you know, as I travel the country. People are talking about it all the time. So I think that gives us a bit of hope that, you know, we will arrive at something that will certainly be an agreement between, you know, the colonisers and our people and those who've come here since.
Well, some states are being a bit quiet. We haven't even heard anything from Queensland. You're a Queenslander. Any talks or discussions?
No, that's right. Actually, in fact, that was going to be my next comment because you took the words right out of my mouth, is that Queensland, I think, has been very quiet on the issue of treaty. I must say, though, they have appointed a treaty advocate in terms of Chris Zara, Dr. Chris Zara, to head the State Department there. So I think we might see some movement in that direction because, let's face it, you know, it's been very quiet, and I think there's been a bit of a lack of direction from Queensland for quite some time now. In fact, years, I would say, and I don't say that proudly, you know, as a Queenslander, but I'd like to see more action on their part in relation to Aboriginal affairs, and hopefully, you know, this might be the chance. And treaty would be, I think, one of the top three discussions that they need to have.
Yeah, so it seems like some people are a bit scared because there are a lot of, like, there is division, but I don't think that should be the reason to actually stop people from actually going forward regarding discussions around treaty. I know a lot of people want sovereignty to be ceded, or because sovereignty hasn't been ceded, that people want it acknowledged, which would then, I guess, be a separate group from who would actually work to have a conversation with the government. But as we've seen in Victoria now, they're looking at a representative body which can include, you know, obviously people who do want to continue the discussions around sovereignty, because it's a tricky discussion and it's very hard because we have a Commonwealth government which isn't going to go away. So
no.
This is where there is a bit of, I guess, disparity in some sense, but also people, it's a bit of a division.
That's right. And sovereignty has always been at the heart of the treaty, and how you intrinsically, you know, combine those two. I think they're absolutely complementary to one another. I do take my hat off to people, Michael Anderson and Michael Mansell and others have been, you know, driving the debate around sovereignty for, you know, for a long, long time now. And, you know, treaty, I think, can fall within that. But, of course, we need to have a lot more discussion, too, around our own people and within our own communities to come up with a workable solution if we can. But I think the debates that are happening now are really healthy and great. There are a few states and territories, as you say, that are still missing. We would hope that they get this call and they get the message to go hard on it now and see what we can arrive at, because it would be fabulous to see an agreement of some sort within the next 5-10 years, and I think that's quite possible.
As the opposition leader Bill Shorten is talking about supporting a national treaty framework, he's also talking about the Makarrata Commission. So the aspirations of that, from what came out of the statement from the heart, from the First Nations dialogues, was around a Makarrata Commission and truth-telling as well as treaties. Can you talk a bit about that or your understanding of it? Because I do want to talk a bit about the voice to Parliament as well.
Yes, certainly. Well, you know, we've heard the discussion too, especially from the working group, from the statement from the heart, who say that it's probably best to get Makarrata truth-telling up first, then we can talk the truths and the history of our country. You know, I think there's an absolute truth in that, and, you know, that needs to be pursued as much as we can. you know, rather than getting the voice up, is some of the working group's idea around that. I think quite clearly, you know, since the old days of the Council for Aboriginal Reconciliation, who put up 6 recommendations, and only 2 were carried out. So one was the apology, which has been fantastic. You know, we can't be a nation at peace with itself or at rest with itself until we know what has happened to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
Well, there's a couple more things I want to talk to you about, but you are listening to NITV Radio. I'm Kirsten Lindsay. I've got Dr. Jackie Huggins on the phone with me. She is the co-chair of the National Congress of Australia's First Peoples. So, Dr. Huggins, the Federal Minister for Indigenous Affairs, Nigel Scullion, is still talking about an Indigenous voice to Parliament being undefined, and he's talking about how it should be run through his office. Regarding any aspirations that you have regarding a voice to Parliament, do you want to share a little bit about those?
Yes, well, you know, certainly the voice through the voice to Parliament, I think, with National Congress, think is very important. In terms of the complexity of it, how that is made up, of course, still needs to be defined. We know that since that SIC left, that National Congress has been the voice for our people. I think very much we've been still championing our causes and calling out the racism and the injustices as we see it, as much as possible. But, you know, we're very restricted on a very limited resource budget that we have. But, you know, we'll continue to do that. But the voice to Parliament that Bill Shorten has, he will legislate when he gets into office, is something that I know that National Congress will be at the front and the centre of those discussions, because we've had talks with Bill Shorten's office and with Bill himself, and he has certainly declared that to us.
Do you think that with the current government that we have, that we may see that national treaty framework and a voice to Parliament?
Look, I think they have made it quite clear that that's not going to happen. And unfortunately, we're going to have to find ways of going around that, because I don't think that they will entertain the thought of the voice, or, you know, very mistakenly, as they call it, the third chamber of Parliament, which it is not, be allowed to commence. So, no, I think our work with the present government, unfortunately, in relation to that, particularly the voice, is over and done with. And we can only hope that, you know, a future government might revisit that, or that if Labor gets in, then obviously they will come good on their promises.
This was an NITV Radio podcast. For more, visit sbs.com.au/NITV Radio or download the SBS Radio app.